Liftoff Journeys, where we ignite the stories of those daring to soar. Join us as we delve into the uncharted territories of success, sharing the triumphs and hardships of extraordinary individuals determined to reach new heights. Get ready to be inspired, challenged, and uplifted on Liftoff Journeys. Let's launch this together. And here we are today. I've got Doug Zarkin. He was recently on the TV show. Doug, I'm so excited to have you on Liftoff Journeys. Thanks for joining the podcast.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this podcast is done both video and audio, which is a lot of fun. But I always forget, because I can see you and, you know, I move my hands a lot, that people like to just listen in their cars. So we got to make sure we make this interesting for them as well.
Well, given how early we're recording this and coming off an airplane, I would encourage you, listen, don't watch. It's the spackle and touch-ups weren't here this morning. So bear with me.
Well, we didn't have makeup this morning like we had in the studios, but I still think this is going to be a great conversation. So, Doug, I was so surprised when I was doing the research for you coming on the show to realize that I think you and I are connected to almost everybody in the world of marketing, branding, and advertising together. So I'm so curious to hear a little bit about your story and how you got into the world of marketing, branding, and advertising that you're in today.
You know, I think it would be disingenuous to say that I had a complete comprehensive plan coming out of graduate school. In fact, I graduated undergrad on a Sunday and started my MBA on a Monday morning. And I was the kid sitting in the back of, you know, business law and consumer marketing, wearing his fraternity letters, sitting in a room full of grownups. And by grownups, probably they were like 28 and they had real furniture, not IKEA furniture in their houses. But I very quickly started to understand that my passions lied in this notion that eventually I came to believe was called thinking human. And it was about the understanding that the way to be successful is to really figure out how to put the brand on the brain of a consumer. And I got very fortunate in a land before time, otherwise known as LinkedIn, that I got some great career advice. And somebody said to me, listen, if you ever want to run a business or a brand, start at the end of the train and work your way up. And so the end of the train was being a media planner and buyer in the agency world. And so I spent in my first decade in the agency world, media account management, eventually started the youth and entertainment division of Gray Advertising, and then made that jump to the client side, or as agency people like to say, the dark side of the force, and very quickly got intoxicated by the notion of impacting not just the what, but the why. And moving from my first job on the client side as the director of marketing for Avon, starting their new business line, Mark, moving to Victoria's Secret, bopping around the fashion world, and then eventually spending 11 years at Estée Lauder heading up Pearle Vision. For me, it was always about the journey of influencing the destination and strategic moves that a brand made. And today, I'm very fortunate to find myself as the chief brand officer of an exciting holding company, Goodfeet, that is really committed to overall health and wellness. And through the Goodfeet store and OS First and our recent acquisition of Stretched, we really are focusing on that entire kinetic chain to allow people to live the lives they want to live. And it's amazing. And you know this from your background, to be able to do great work while doing great for people. I don't really think there's a better thing in the world to be able to do.
So true. It's so true. But I got to ask, what was your undergrad degree in?
So I had an undergrad degree in BBA in marketing, and started to get my MBA and JD, and realized after my first business law class, while I loved it, I just wasn't cut out to be an attorney. What I liked about the law was not something that I thought I was going to be successful in. And so I blew through my MBA, got it done in 13 months, and then headed to New York to try to craft my future.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So my undergrad was in psychology, and don't know why I picked it. I do know why. I wanted to be a teacher. That's what they said you had to get a degree in so you could get your master's in teaching back then. And I can't tell you how many times now in the world of marketing, I look back and think, oh my God, this psychology degree was really helpful.
Brilliant you know? Move. If I had to do it again, honestly, I would have probably done a double major undergrad in psych and marketing, because the mindset of a customer, understanding how people think, is at the core of developing platforms that can do what marketing is intended to do, which is, in its purest sense, motivating the consumer to do what we want them to do when we want them to do it. you can do that for good or you can do that for evil. Again, it depends on what business you're in. But you, that was such a smart move.
Yeah, well, that was an accidental smart move because when I was 11, I wanted to be a veterinarian, a teacher, or a cashier. So okay. Thankfully, I did not go down the route of cashier. And yet I asked Santa Claus every single year to give me a cash register. And I never got one for Christmas. So we'll just have that discussion later.
That's why you have an Amazon Prime cart. It's the same basic thing.
I wanted to push the buttons. And I tried to be a veterinarian. But after I had to put so many homeless cats and dogs down when I volunteered, I couldn't. I just couldn't bring myself to the unhappy side of being a veterinarian. Yeah. So I decided teacher was the best and somehow, you know, ended up in marketing, which is, you know, a different story. But a lot of people who listen to this podcast are newer to their careers. They're just starting out. You and I were both really fortunate that early on in our careers, we had the opportunity to work at Gray, which at the times we worked with it was on the cutting edge of everything.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, really investing in the future and what was new and what was interesting. And that's amazing. Today's world is a lot different for anybody coming out of school. It's a lot different for anybody looking to get started with generative AI and needing to know programming. If you had to give advice to somebody that was coming out of school, going to look for a job in marketing or advertising, what advice would you give them?
Well, first of all, I think anybody coming out of school and getting into that world has no idea what it's like to be sitting in the office in a shirt and tie at 3:30 in the morning, waiting for the copy center to produce your acetates or bind your decks for the next day meeting at 8 o'clock. Okay. Anybody who worked at Gray found themselves going from elevator bank to elevator bank with giant stacks, laying things out in a conference room and literally hand spiral binding documents for big meetings. That's a rite of passage that everybody who enters the world of marketing should have to do. Don't whine that you have to make last minute edits to a PowerPoint deck. All right. Imagine literally composing an 80-page document in spiral binds that have to be perfect for the next day. Sorry, diatribe. My advice for a little PTSD when we talk about Gray, because we've all been there. My advice for people coming out of school, truly, in entering this world is don't put so much pressure on yourself to be perfect, because perfection simply does not exist in the world of marketing. Focus instead on the goal of progress, progress in the decisions you make, frankly, in the mistakes that you made and make, the way you think. We grew up in a generation that was all about achievement. What I love about today's generation as a human is also one of the challenges as a leader is that there's much more about the how, not necessarily the what. You know, when we were working late, nobody cared. You know, you worked a 10-hour day, and if needed, you slept in the office to get it done. Today, there's a little bit more of a work-life balance, and I applaud that. But there still is a tremendous amount of pressure to achieve. And the idea of listening, it's not a skill that's really taught early in your career. So think about the journey. Take the long approach. Don't worry about trying to get it perfect the first time. Worry about understanding why it isn't and then move forward.
I love that. That's so smart. And I think it's going to be so helpful for so many people that are listening. And I know you've written a book, right? Moving your brand out of the friend zone. And I know you're talking about brands holistically, but let's talk a little bit about personal brands of, you know, all of the people that are looking to build a career. What's your advice for people that are looking to build a personal brand?
So, you know, in writing the book, it's interesting because it was very cathartic, not only as a hopeful resource tool for somebody coming out of school to kind of craft their own journey, but for me to kind of reflect on my own personal journey and my own personal brand, if that exists. I think you've got to recognize that the how is more important than the what. And it's hard in a results-driven culture. How you treat the people that you work with will help define your brand. How you handle yourself in adversity is how you define your brand. How you handle yourself in failure is how you define your brand. It is really easy. You know, if you think back to dating, right? When we were dating people, you could have an amazing date, going to an amazing restaurant or an amazing event. But was it really an amazing date or was it really an amazing event? To me, I fell in love with my wife, we're married 20 years, not at the trips that we took or the shows that we saw, but the walks that we took, you know, just running out and grabbing, you know, brunch on a Sunday. Those small things really matter. And I think that's something to really keep in mind as you're defining your personal brand. Find those small moments that help define the human being that you are. And don't ever forget that at the end of the day, it is about people. And that is, that's a lesson I didn't learn until pretty late in my career, but I am sure glad I did.
So many people talk about being excellent and the details matter. How do you suggest that people bring that out in front? How do you get started?
So think about everything you do using the 80-20 rule. Okay. And this has been very helpful for me because I am a perfectionist and I'm super competitive. Ask anybody I play tennis with, ask anybody that I'm in a board meeting with. I'm competitive. I want to win. And that doesn't mean I want to be right. It means I want to win. 80% of the time, if something is 80% perfect, it's enough. 20% of the time, it's got to be 100% perfect. And usually that involves money, okay, in order to go. It's kind of the law of diminishing returns. You know, I can think back to creative meetings early in my career where, you know, I would say, make the logo bigger. And the creative guy was like, really? You want the logo bigger? I want the logo bigger. Why? Because I just think it's too small. And in retrospect, when I think back on some of those conversations, did it really make a difference? Probably more often, no. And if I had to replay myself, I probably could have avoided some conflict early in my career by understanding that at times pretty damn good is pretty damn good enough. But in doing so, you have to really understand where there is no room for anything other than perfection. And most importantly, be able to communicate that to those around you. You know, if you can give somebody a heads up that, guys, this is critical. I's T dotted crossed, take the time. You can be requiring provided you're transparent. It's when people don't know and don't see you coming and you have that degree of requirement, then it creates unnecessary conflict.
So you talk about not needing to be perfect all of the time, maybe 80% of the time. Tell me about a time when you learned by not being perfect enough. Tell me about a failure.
Tell you a successful failure? Oh, easy. You know, my tenure at Victoria's Secret Pink is a great example of a successful failure. You know, I achieved a number of things that I'm super proud of. I helped unlock the potential of that business. But that experience from a career perspective was an utter train wreck. I say that because I had no idea of the culture I was walking into. They recruited me like the center fielder for the New York Yankees. The jet, meet with the owner, big bonus, all that stuff. And it was the first time in my career for somebody that wasn't really handed any opportunity. I always fought for it. I always kind of had that chip on my shoulder that I was going to work a little harder. You know, maybe it's because I wasn't a great athlete growing up and I always had to work a little harder to be competitive. That spark in me helped drive my sense of personal accomplishment, but it also blinded me when I joined the organization to what I was really walking into. And I got kind of punched in the face with the reality of the culture that you are a part of is such a determinant on how well you're going to do. And it also gives you the opportunity to understand the kind of cultural ambassador you want to be. I learned more about the leader that I wanted to be working with leaders that I didn't want to work with. And, you know, I was only there for a relatively short time. Again, was able to accomplish some things that still you can see in the brand, but it was not the career sort of acceleration that I had wanted. It was more of a step to the side, not that giant step forward.
Yeah. And well, so many times things that initially appear to be challenges or failures end up defining who you are to move forward and turn out to be one of the best learning opportunities that you can possibly get. I'm a big believer that nothing bad happens for anything other than an incredibly positive reason. And it sounds
I wish I was that optimistic. I mean, bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to terrible people. Some people in our lives have a unique knack, kind of like a cat, to fall forward. I mean, how many people have we worked with in our career that have very little talent that just continue to fall forward? And you scratch your head and you're like, I just don't get it. For me, at least, what I try to do is live by my own moral code. you know, for me, my integrity is the most important thing. I will never compromise my integrity. I also am a completely transparent person, both in my personal life and my professional life. You'll always know where you stand with me. And that's really helpful in building teams, because who wants to go into a meeting with their boss and think it went well and then find out 7 months later in a performance review that it didn't? Yeah. I am such a fan of real-time feedback. I think it's an amazing coaching opportunity. It's also, how fantastic is it to get a random phone call from somebody saying, I just had to tell you, you knocked it out of the park. And it could be just like a basic meeting. But like that little energy jolt, I was very fortunate in that I had one amazing mentor in my career. One. And you're probably gonna say, well, that's why are we fortunate? Because I learned so much from that one leader that helped me understand all the other leaders that I worked for. Perhaps that not all of them, because some of them may listen to this, and not all of you were bad. You guys all taught me stuff and I appreciate it. And maybe I need you as a reference, so I want to slow my roll a bit. But I learned a lot about evaluating leadership and the importance of those small moments of connection, not only in how you build brands, but how you build your own personal brand and how you build those relationships. And I am truly grateful for every inspiring leader I worked for, especially those that weren't necessarily inspiring.
And let's talk about leadership. You know, early on in both of our careers, especially coming out of the culture at Gray, there's challenging opportunities to step up as leaders. And that's saying it very nicely. So we could start a whole new podcast about what it was like working in the agency world. And sure, that would probably sure. go crazy. But yeah. But as a leader, was it the mentor that taught you what you needed to know about leadership? Was it falling into challenging situations? How did you develop your leadership skills?
I'm still a work in progress. And I am not ashamed to admit that, because I get better every day. And I get better from errors in judgment, but also wins. You know, when I can try to predict the movie that's going to play out and not take the door to the left that's going to lead to something negative, but take the door to the right. And that doesn't happen every moment of every day. But when I have those wins, I celebrate them. It's a hard question. It's a hard question to answer. I'm not going to lie. It's a hard question to answer. Figuring out what you want to be is a byproduct of having the opportunity to climb the rope and not completely choke yourself out, but maybe cut off the flow a little bit so you realize that something isn't right. And the most prolific leader in my career did just that for me. She gave me enough rope to climb. She gave me enough rope to feel a little bit of the pain of I made a big error in judgment or an error in judgment. And that sinking feeling of wow, you know, maybe I could have done it different. You try to hold on to that.
I'm pausing so everyone can just think about that, because I think it's a really important statement. And I think it's really great advice for people that are leaders looking to see how they can improve their leadership skills, and people that are looking for great mentors and questioning themselves every day when they get to work, if they're doing the right thing and if they're building their career.
I you know, somebody like yourself that has such a prolific career background, one could look and say, you know, she never second guesses herself. I will tell you, as somebody who's tried to accomplish some things, I second guess myself every single moment of every single day, both in my personal life and my professional life. And that's not out of insecurity. That's out of the desire to really do great for people. You know, how I coach my son, you know, how I talk to my daughter, that's in my personal life, my wife. But in my professional life, it's how did I handle that meeting? You know, was the meeting about a win or was the meeting about building a foundation? And I don't always make the right call because I'm not perfect. But I'm a really good person. And I can say that not in an arrogant way. Even those that necessarily I haven't fallen in love with or vice versa will tell you that at the core, Doug is a really good person. And I can live with that. I can live that we may not be the great best work partner, but is he a really good person? Does he really want to help? Does he really want to help us win? And if the answer is yes to all of those, that's about respect. And, you know, respect or liked is one of those always questions. Would you rather be respect or liked? Let me ask you, what would you rather be, respect or liked?
Oh, totally liked. And that's why I'm not rich. So I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. It's a hard thing. Cause it's, you know, it's the tyranny of the your, right? You know, would you rather be respected or would you rather be liked? And I answer it by kind of refuting the question, which is, I think you can be both, but not all the time.
That is true. That is true. That is true. But you mentioned your son.
Yeah.
When you look back, I don't know, how old is your son now?
He's 13.
Okay. So when you look back and you think about, am I a good dad? As every parent looks back and says, well, I really screwed that one up, or I did great. What is it that you want to instill in him as he grows older?
You're going full Phil Donahue on me. And I'm saying that because you and I are the same generation. Don't get me teared up. So let me keep it together, Doug. It's weird. I don't know, maybe it's because I'm getting ready to celebrate my birthday. I don't know. I get very, very emotional when I talk about my family. My son is a mini version of me, but so much better. And what's interesting is I can see the way he processes things. His personality and my personality are almost identical, which is why we love very hard together, but we also like fight like crazy, especially when I coach him. And fortunately that part of our relationship is ending as he's now getting into more formal, he plays travel baseball and he's getting ready to play high school baseball. And I'm clearly that's not me, but I coached him for 7 years in lacrosse cause I played. And, you know, I remember saying to him, you know, he said to me, Dad, he goes, why are you harder than me on me than everybody else? I said, because you're my son. I said, if you're not doing what I need you to do, you're not listening, you're not the first one at the drill, you're not the first one picking up the cone, then they're going to say to themselves, well, if Doug's son Ben isn't doing it, I don't need to do it. And you set an example as a leader by your actions, not just by your words. And he's like, Dad, I'm not a leader. I'm like, you are. I'm like, whether you know it or not, when you are the coach's son, you are a leader. But I also see the angst that he has from just being such a competitive kid and being such a perfectionist and wanting to achieve. And it hurts. You know, you want to take the pain away from your kids when they don't have successes. It's hard, really hard. And you can't. So all you have to do is just try to walk them through it and, you know, let them experience their first heartbreak, their first time they didn't make a sports team. Those things you just, as a parent, make you sick. But you have to allow that to happen because it shapes who they are. He is so much going to be a better version of me than I was, because throughout the journey, my commitment to him is to try to impart not wisdom, but narrative stories to help him see that there is a way to avoid or to mitigate some of the things. Like, I'll give you a really good example. I was going to diatribe. I was one of those kids that didn't open a book until I went to college. Okay. I was a National Honor Society's kid in high school. I never studied. I didn't know how to study. I didn't need to study. And now with him, I'm watching him in school and he's brilliant. I mean, straight A's, but he has to work at it. And there are days where, you know, I'll catch him on his Xbox when he should be studying. I just don't want to study. I'm like, Ben, don't miss the opportunity to be amazing. You know, and I think as a leader, kind of from a business perspective, what I try to say to my team is similar, because your team is kind of like your family. Don't miss the opportunity to be amazing. Don't phone it in. You know, if you can do something today and you can get it done, get it done. I don't know, life lessons, a little bit of parenting, I'm not really sure.
I know, but I think don't miss the opportunity to be amazing is the only way that we can probably end the podcast, because I don't want to ruin that moment right now. You said so many powerful things, and this has been such a great conversation. I could talk to you for hours and quiz you and ask you really hard questions, like what's harder, being a parent or being a marketing genius? But I'm going to leave that for the next time.
Trying to communicate with my 16-year-old daughter. That's the hardest thing. Marketing's easy. Being a parent to a teenage girl is impossible.
Well, you heard it here first. Doug Zarkin, don't miss an opportunity to be amazing. Go get his book, everybody. It's out there and it's amazing. I've already read it. So, and if you haven't watched him on the TV show, go back and watch Liftoff, because he's got a great, great interview on that show. Thanks so much, Doug.
Thank you.
Go get some sleep. All right.